There you go. That's Kurt Von Eckroth, and you're the master zitherist.
Be careful where we're going.
Yeah. I'm so excited. This may be the best moment I've ever had doing radio. I mean, how many, we were talking before the show, how many places on radio right now are you hearing live zither music? So thank you all for coming in. Kurt, your wife, Megan?
Yeah.
Hi there.
And Jeff Kovac.
Kovalkovsky.
Jeff, you kind of put all this together thanks to my brother.
Yeah.
He told me Doug was up at Christmas, and he goes, let's start there. He says, you were doing a thing in Columbia where you led like a whole, what are they, I had it written down here, a whole zither orchestra or something. So talk about that and then how you guys all got to know each other.
Oh, yeah. Well, I started conducting the Chicago Zither Orchestra, and I was lucky enough to conduct it in 2013. It was the last concert of the Zither Club.
They were around from 1913 to, they were around 100 years exactly.
Around 100 years, right. Yeah. And one of my compositions, position students, his aunt was a woman named Janet Stessel, and she was a zitherist who played with the Chicago Symphony when they needed a zither, which is not very often. And
well, what would they? I want to define a zither in a minute because I know John over here is lost. But
yeah,
what would they need a zither for?
Like for Strauss or Mahler,
okay,
or like certain late Romantic composers added the zither to the orchestra in a kind of effectual way. But the zither we're hearing tonight is more of an alpine zither, I would say, and it's the portability of the instrument is what's most interesting to me. Kind of climbing up here to the 18th floor seems like climbing up a mountain, which is what you could do with a zither in the old days in the Alps. You could put that on your back, and you could go backpacking up in the mountains, and you could bring your piano with you in a way. And I think of it as a kind of grandfather of the piano. And also, the musicians who are able to play the zither are, I mean, it's an astounding amount of technique, 42 strings.
Yeah.
The range is the same as a piano, and you could play amazing amount of repertoire on the zither.
It's yeah, that's about all I knew about it. I mean, tell the listeners what is. I mean, I've been telling people about this, and they go, what are you talking about? So, what is a zither? That's about all I know. A guitar has six strings. This has 42.
42, right? Yeah.
So, what is? Just both of you guys define a zither.
I think Kurt could talk about the mechanics.
I'll start it, and you fill in the blanks. Okay,
I'll fill in the blanks.
Zither is just a general, broad term for any stringed instrument that has no neck and this poor little thing doesn't have a neck.
Just like Walt Wilson.
we got a no-neck thing going here. Take that thing to the ballpark.
Yeah, right. But it does have frets. There are five fingerboard strings nearest my belly, tuned as a viola, ADGC. I don't know how technical the audience is, but the melody is... There are 12 accompaniment strings used for chording, rhythm, and bass strings. And then you put it all together and you make music, or you think you do.
Yeah.
How hard is it to play? And also for both you guys, how'd you get into the zither?
I was made to play the zither.
Well, you're a young guy.
Yeah,
I thought we might have like somebody like our friend on the record album showing up, like an 80-year-old guy with a zither, and here you are. You're like
when you're 90,
how old are you?
Oh, I'm 63.
Oh, you look. Yeah.
Good. Okay. I'm glad for the little things in life.
So you were made to play.
Well, yeah. And when you're 9, you don't very much tell your father to. Pee off.
Yeah, right. So it was around the house. You're from Wisconsin?
From Wisconsin. Grew up in Wisconsin.
Milwaukee area?
Just a little west of Milwaukee, out in the country. My parents didn't want the bad influences of the city influencing us, so my nearest neighbor was a mile away.
So the zither was around the house?
Yeah. We knew about it. My fate was sealed when the movie The Third Man came out in 1949, and I was born in 55, but by that point, the zither was in my dad's gun sights.
Yeah. I want to talk about Orson Welles in a minute. Jeff, same thing, and I didn't know this. We've got kind of a similar background. You were born in Berwyn, Westchester?
Yeah, that's true.
So how did it come to you?
The zither, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I was lucky enough to be honored to conduct the Chicago Zither Orchestra, and then after that, I was invited to conduct the North American Zither Summits. I've conducted several in Iowa and Davenport, Iowa. There's a big zither scene there with Ann Prince, and also in Missouri, in Washington, Missouri, where the Schwartz Zither factory was. This is a 1890s, 19th century zither manufacturer who was an inventor, and he won a gold medal in, I think it was 1893 or so, and then he built a factory and sold his zithers all around the world, and employed many, many people in his factory. He was a master lutherist or manufacturer of the zither. And I'm a conductor, and so it was a pleasure for me to conduct 30 or 40 zithers at once.
How does that sound?
Say zither orchestra, how many you've got? I mean, you like different sections and stuff, just like any orchestra?
Yeah.
Are they all tuned differently or something like that?
Well,
or?
Some of them are playing kind of a bass range, and some in the tenor range, and the alto and the soprano. And we also had a master soloist from Germany, Tommy Tamerson. Yeah. Tony, you say tomato, I say tomato.
There you go, sure.
But Tommy Tamerson came, and he's kind of the Yo-Yo Ma of the zither, and he comes often to teach zither and to help us create a large, grand zither orchestra.
Me better.
So the club here in Chicago, man, I saw that. I told you this week, I saw some of those YouTube videos. It's great. So it stopped in 2013.
Yeah.
And what happened? The zither players just got old and retired? Like, where's the future of this going? And why did it stop?
I'm the young guy in the crowd.
You are the young guy. Yeah. Yeah.
There are some younger people. But
why did it stop?
Oh, I don't know.
I think it was age.
It was age.
They retired, and They moved on from the scene of it takes a lot of work to put zithers on the stage. You imagine we all have to tune our instruments, and you imagine 40 times 40, that's a big number, so it's a lot of strings to tune, and you have to bring tables, and we have to set everything up, so...
Does the zither have a dedicated string? Are there strings specifically for the
yes.
zither? Can't use the other stringed instruments' strings on it?
In a pinch, yeah. You know, when you can't buy them. But there are four or five manufacturers of strings in Germany, as surprising as that is. It's hitting a resurgence in Germany in the young people.
So it should hit a resurgence everywhere. I just love the way it sounds.
We hope.
You know, I brought in my one zither album. I wanted to talk about him, Rudy Wasek. I would call him, I don't know what I'm talking about. I would call him the Hendrix of the zither.
Right.
Because what he did is he put electronics on it.
Right,
talk
sure.
about, you know more, better than I.
Let me take this one.
Yeah. Right.
Let me take this one, Jeff. I met Rudy Wasek. And, and in fact, in this... table, there's a Wasek zither sitting in underneath it. He made five of these things, and I own two of them, and I know where another two are. There's one that's missing of the five. I don't know where it is. And he went to go see Les Paul. I don't know whether in Waukesha or whether in New York, but he learned how to wind his own pickups. And Wasek came out of Vienna, and he had his own dance orchestra. He was an accordionist. And then when the movie comes out, The Third Man.
And we'll talk about that after the break.
He remembers this, you know, so he goes, oh, I got to bring this zither thing back. He had learned it as a child. So he finds one. Well, in no way, it's such a soft instrument. There's no way that you can use this as a dance vehicle. So he wants to amplify it, and he tears out a whole section of strings. Hey, we don't need them. And he brings the contrabasses up, and so this has a nice big bass sound and his own pickups.
Okay, we got to take a break. I'm going to pick up on that. And I want to cross over. He played the Golden Ox and all that. So he did take it out. So don't go away. This is great stuff on Nocturnal Journal on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. We're talking zither music, and now we're going to bring vocals into it. So, Kurt and Megan, tell me what you're going to do here.
This piece is called Glocken der Heimat. It's being sung in German. It was written by Avsenik in the mid-1950s. And away we go.
Oh, this is going to be great.
Glocken der Heimat klingen von weitem, nur wie im Traum.
Beautiful. Wow. That was Dan Long, do you think we can do a weekly zither show here at WGN? So much. Is listener Al still there? Listener Al has a question for.
Sorry.
Al.
Hello?
Yeah.
This is, you want to have a question for Jeff?
Hey, what's up,
Well, Dad? Yeah, you know, I bet you're kind of surprised that you have somebody actually calling in to talk zither with you.
Well, why not? Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't catch your name, but the one fellow was born in the Milwaukee area. I wonder if he remembers a restaurant that was called the Golden Zither.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, maybe yeah. He would have played there.
I never played there. It went out of business before I was old enough to play there.
Well, yeah, listener Al. Go ahead, listener Al.
It was an interesting place. One of my older brothers had graduated from Marquette in 1969. I remember our whole family went there for the dinner sure. after graduation.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's one thing we were going to bring up is this did cross over maybe the fifth. I mean, talk about here in the studio, the Golden Ox. Our friend Rudy was there and Black Forest. Talk about how did it end up in these? I guess they were accompaniment for the dinners and stuff. Or talk about how it was.
Well, I think that zither players would just come into restaurants and set up and play and at a table and do their thing because the portability of the instrument is so simple, and also having a singer also just makes it like a kind of a two-person orchestra, in yeah. my opinion, when I listen to the sound of the ensemble here. And, you know, the Golden Ox in Chicago was a place where that was where the zither community used to rehearse and also have concerts as well. Yeah.
And when did all that, and same thing, are you still there, Al? Is he gone? When did all that fade away?
Probably in the 70s.
It's been fading. It's been fading for a while. There's a huge influx of the Germanic tribe in the 1860s, 70s, yeah. 80s. And then after World War II, in between the wars because of the depression that was worldwide. It's a solo instrument. It's an instrument that can be set up in a restaurant and give you some sound, and people can sing to it if they want. You can
Is anybody using it as for styles of music other than what it was, like the waltzes and so forth that you're doing? I mean, is anybody trying to contemporize the sound in order to perpetuate it?
The main thrust of the modern zither players are trying to play Brahms and so forth, and I don't know that it's well suited for that. There are those who are playing jazz and blues, so it does. Freddie Coleman, for example, is doing.
Is it? Can you play bluegrass on the zither?
Yeah,
it's the
dulcimer. It's a complete instrument. Yeah. All the notes are there. You just need to. I mean, at some point, I suppose you include the. You know, your 10 fingers, and then bring the toes into play. I don't know how to play 42 instrument, 42 strings.
Before the break, Megan, how did you guys meet? I mean, is this just a coincidence, or did he teach you? I mean, did you know about this stuff? I mean,
I actually started out at, I went to Whitewater and studied voice for a period of time, graduated, and then decided that it wasn't really something that I really wanted to pursue as a career, so I decided to do the next logical thing, which is study electrical engineering. I actually met Kurt at one of the tech colleges in Wisconsin. He was teaching at the time. And then once I graduated from the tech school, Kurt knew that I had this background in voice and said, hey, you know, I play zither and I'm looking for a vocalist and I think this would be a great opportunity. And so at first I was kind of unsure about, you know, my voice type and how it fit with this instrument that I'd never heard of previously.
So that's
kind of how this mm-hmm. started. And then from there we would do, you know, we'd have practice sessions and do gigs and that sort of thing. And I think it's just the instrument and my voice, I think, are very well suited for each other. It's a softer instrument. I have a softer voice. So, yeah.
Okay, we got to take a break for David Jennings and the news, and we're talking about some more music. I didn't even know they're going to be here for George Flynn tomorrow. So they're going to be here at the Green. So we're going to talk about that. Yeah. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. We okay there? And now we're going to talk. You know, I want to kind of talk about with, we got our panelists here. We got our sidekick, John Hughes, sitting in tonight, all the way up from Louisville. And our zither, master zither player, Kurt Von Eckroth. Is that
sure.
pronouncing that right?
Yeah.
And his wife, Megan. Beautiful job on those vocals.
Thank you.
And our friend, Jeff?
Kowalkowski.
And, well, let's just start at ground zero before we get into George Flynn. I know you through my brother.
Yeah, Doug.
And
yeah.
I've seen you perform.
Yeah.
So talk about that. I mean, you've done all kinds of different types of music. We're going to get to George Flynn and that gig tomorrow. But, talk about what you were doing with Doug.
Well, I met Doug a long time ago, and I started playing with his bands, and I did a lot of overdubs on his albums in Nashville. I used to fax cello charts and horn charts down in Nashville before there was email. And they'd end up on his records. And I remember playing with Doug at the Bottom Line in New York City for a week and playing in Philadelphia and touring with
Doug.
Were
you on keyboard? What did you play?
I played all multi-instruments, percussion, keyboards, piano, and accordion sometimes even. I wrote a lot of scores for his overdubs on his albums. Like I scored out the cello parts, and we'd overdub like five or six cellos, five or six horns. So I've known him a long time, and he actually recorded some of his records in my basement when I had a studio in my basement before my sons were born. And yeah, we go back pretty far.
How would you describe the type of music you were doing with Doug?
I'd say it was like alt country or like experimental country. A lot of the bands I played in came out of, mentioned Phyllis's Musical Inn.
Yeah.
I mean, before it was a rock club, it was a polka bar in the 50s, and I think my dad used to play there, in the early 60s, and I played there when I was in my teens and 20s, playing in punk bands and grunge bands and stuff like that.
John, there's a we've had them on the show. We've had Clem on the show before, and I really believe there's and I don't know, maybe this is true in clubs that you've seen in Louisville or Long Beach, but I really do think there's a defined sound that always comes out of, that came out of Phyllis's.
Yeah.
And you're probably better at explaining that than I, but I mean, I want to say it was dense, folky, country, urban. I mean, I'm thinking we all love Soul American.
Right. Yeah.
Stump the Host, Steve Dawson's old thing. Talk about what that vibe was like there.
Well,
and it was pretty wide open. You could experiment.
Yeah, we could experiment. And I remember opening up for Soul American and recording with Scott Tuma, who was a guitarist in that band. And we would try a lot of things, like just slowing down country or like playing blues but with a rock aesthetic. And
just the environment you were in, how much did that have to do with it, just the atmosphere of the place with the kind of sound that came out of it?
I just think it was just easy, you know. Clem made it easy.
Clem's still around.
He had us come in and just kind of encouraged us to try things out. Some of my first gigs were at Phyllis's.
It used to be Polish Broadway. And there were like 50 polka club. Little Wally played on there and something. And his is like really the last place.
Right. They
still got some original wallpaper up there of
we went
polka
to a, you and I went to one of those.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
we
might have. Yeah, we might have. I might have taken you there. It's a very important place.
Yeah, we did.
In Chicago.
Did.
Yeah. So, new music.
Yeah.
How do you define, all you guys, how do you define new music?
Well, for me, it's... I'm a composer and a music theorist, so my main interests are in the new and the avant-garde. And since I was a graduate student, this is going back to the early 90s, I've been doing Sunday afternoon matinee concerts with, we call it Ink Still Wet music. And tomorrow we'll have another matinee.
That's at the Green Mill.
That's at the Green Mill.
4802 North Broadway.
Correct. Right off of the Lawrence Red Line stop. And We've been doing concerts there for almost 30 years. George Flynn is the leader of the group, and every January we do a birthday celebration for him. And he'll be 81, I think, this month, and he'll be there performing new music. And there'll be 11 or 12 composers on the same bill, myself included.
And you guys will be there.
Yep. We'll be there.
I didn't know that till you came in tonight.
Yeah, they'll be playing.
You'll be playing.
They'll be playing as people arrive and probably have a little set as the audience settles. And
will you be playing Zither music?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also in the intermission.
I really
as well.
Like the cocktail hour.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason I play the zither is so I can play all these cocktail hours.
Now, tell the listeners, you know, who George Flynn is. There's a YouTube clip of him saying how he's avant-garde classical, which means no one's interested in what I play. You know, right. Something like that. I mean, so what does he do, and how do you describe his music, and then how does it connect to just say somebody just walking in the Green Mill for the first time tomorrow?
Well, he's a kind of classic composer. He's a professor emeritus at DePaul. That's where I studied with him, and he was working with John Cage, working with Morton Feldman in New York, and constantly composing. The Guardian in London called his music some of the most violent piano music ever written.
Wow.
So he writes very severe avant-garde. It's the opposite of commercial music, you might say. It's also very influenced by composers like Messiaen and Berio, and he's kind of a brilliant composer. He's recorded many records. He recorded for Finidar Records, which was a subsidiary of Atlantic Records. And he's a champion of new music. He always has been, and a supporter of young composers.
So what time does this start tomorrow?
At 2 p.m.
2 o'clock. It goes on for how long?
Till 4.
Till 4. Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. How many people you have in there?
12.
12? Yeah. In 2 hours?
Yeah.
It's like a mashup or something. Really?
Yeah. It's usually we have a lot of music, and many of the pieces are not very long, so 12 sounds like a lot of composers, but a lot of the pieces are 5 minutes or 10 minutes long.
And you said you do this, how often do you do this? I mean, tomorrow's like a birthday thing.
We do 3 concerts a year, usually, and I do the last Sunday in October, so I do a kind of Halloween concert, and then we have George's birthday concert, which is tomorrow, and then Amy Wirtz, who I think will be there tomorrow, she usually does something in the spring.
For everybody here, how does this music that we're talking about, the new music, maybe what George does, how does that influence other types of music you do?
Well, I guess I do all genres. I know I don't separate.
Yeah.
You know, like I do pop music. I do rock. I do jazz. I do classical. I last night I even was playing chamber music. And,
you did an opera in Hamburg?
Yeah.
What was that?
That was quite a while ago. But I did do a opera collaboration and in Europe and. That I had written and collaborated on, so yeah.
Wow, I feel like Dan. I feel like Milt Rosenberg. This is pretty serious. Milt was a very serious. You know, did you remember him?
Yeah.
WGN, very serious. He had very heady. Same thing for you guys. I mean, other types. I didn't ask you that. Other types of music you play or sing.
This is it.
This is it. Just zither.
There's new music, avant-garde music, and zither.
Zither music. So yeah, artistic director of the Milkwood Foundation. What was that?
That was a recording company that I had with Eric Markowitz, who also played with Doug. He was a guitarist for Doug, and he and I, the bands I started out with were with Eric. We had a band called Nothing, And we played at Phyllis's, and then we became Billy Pilgrim.
Oh, I remember, yeah.
Which was a name we borrowed from a Kurt Vonnegut novel. And we actually asked Kurt Vonnegut's permission to use the name Billy Pilgrim, and he approved it. And then a band from L.A. Bought the name from us, and we got a significant sum from the lawyers, and we told Kurt Vonnegut about it, and he just told us to keep the money. So we used the money to make another record, and then we changed our name to Agatha, and we had many names. We made many albums, but they were not commercially successful.
Well, that actually leads to my next question. John, you covered music, I think, for a while.
Yeah.
Louisville. So what is the muse for what you do? I mean, I just find it so unique, and we've interviewed people, and there's been people on the show, you know, I want to write a pop hit for radio, you know, or I want to tour. What is the muse that makes you explore these little unknown pockets of music, you know? I mean, I think it's fascinating you stay true to that.
You mean to, like, try new things all the
time?
Yeah,
right.
Or listen.
That's another way of putting it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like sense of freedom that I could do whatever I want as a musician. So that's something I hold on to. And I think it's kind of rare around the world. And I think being an American composer, I can do whatever I want, and I don't have to fear anything.
I know Doug and I have talked about this, and again, I've talked about this with other guests. Do you find a little more freedom of expression in Europe? You know, I mean, I know it's true with singer-songwriters. I know it's true with soul music, or not.
I don't think so. I think that we're a lot. That's a tough question, I guess, but we have more eclecticism, and we teach eclecticism in a way. We teach our students that they shouldn't copy anyone else, and they should find their own path, and you shouldn't compare yourself to anyone else. So the creative freedom is what drives me.
So Kurt and Megan, say you wanted to record a zither album. Maybe you have. Maybe you're thinking about it.
Oh, we're thinking about it.
Yeah, so what's the process like? How do you sell somebody on this?
Well, we have to sell each other on the idea.
Yeah. Well, you've got one person. Yeah. I think me and John will buy
it. I'm in.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the next step is figuring out how to cut them, you know, a million CDs and get them in the pack. No. This stuff doesn't necessarily sell.
Yeah, I think it's trying to determine what pieces appeal to today's audience, because the music, the traditional German music or the folk German music, isn't necessarily what people are listening to today. So it's trying to, I guess, integrate the traditional with the modern. That is the struggle for us, especially because a lot of the modern music will have to be adapted for the zither, which is difficult in itself.
Yeah, I think John had a good point. I mean, I could see bluegrass. I could see blues zither.
Sure.
Those are two that I think, you know, you open for Buddy Guy. But you have thought about it, though.
Yes, yeah.
So in line with that, and I don't know whether you do it now or after a quick break, talk about, we talked about the Golden Ox and the zither going in the restaurants and stuff, but talk about, I think a real breakout thing was Orson Welles.
Of course.
So talk about that relationship with the zither.
Well, the movie The Third Man came out in 1949, and not necessarily to good reviews at the time, but it has stood the test of time. It's a classic movie, and part of that movie is the is zither music behind it. It is entirely scored for zither. There's no other music in it aside from the zither, and it's haunting and lilting and devastating when you listen to the score.
That's a good setup.
And Orson Welles met the zitherist in Vienna, right, in a cafe. I think he heard him playing, and he hired him to do the soundtrack. And he had never done a soundtrack at all.
Anton Karas was the writer, and started out his life as a watchmaker, and so he's entertaining in one of these little Heurigen, the new wine places pop open a bottle of wine when it finally gets at least somewhat fermented. And he came to the attention of the producers and so forth. And it was just not possible to, it's not possible to redo that movie without that music.
Okay, we're going
to
take a break. This is a real treat, and you're going to play that after the break,
sure.
Right? I'm really excited about this. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal. I know that song. That's Master Zetterus Kurt von Eckroth. How's that? Is that, are we doing okay with that?
Yeah, well, auf Deutsch, you know, the Germans can't say thumb or the thermometer. They got to go thumb and thermometer, so it's Eckroth.
Eckroth, okay.
Big deal. Big deal.
Do you have a day job? What do you do when you're not playing zither?
I try to stay as retired as possible.
Did you have a day job?
Yeah, I taught electrical engineering at the tech school. I was an engineering manager at the Eaton Corporation.
Okay, so did people know this on the side? Did you walk around and people, hey, there's our zither player?
Yeah, no, yeah, folks certainly knew that I'd be out and playing. At the local restaurants in the in the Milwaukee area.
Are they still? Do you still do that?
Nope.
There's nowhere I can see you. How many? This leads to another question. How many people are still playing zither? Would you say, for both of you guys? I mean, you know the orchestra, and I mean in Missouri.
Jeff, I'm going to let you do this political answer.
Well, when we have a summit, we usually get about like 30 or 40 zitherists come in, and Tommy leads master classes, and we rehearse, and we get players from New Jersey, from California, from Wisconsin, from Illinois, of course, and I'd say there's at least 50 people who are interested in the zither.
So you're
in
saying
North America.
That there's a zither summit.
Yes, there has been multiple ones.
Where have I been? Yeah, right.
Well, you've been to Armenia.
A zither summit. Yeah. All this time.
Yeah. Well, we have a great
How
time
do you go through your life and not know until this point in my life that there's such a thing as a zither summit? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Jeff, I noticed, I've been watching you while he's been playing, and I noticed you close your eyes, you kind of smile.
Yeah.
What are you thinking about? Where is that taking you? What are you what's your mind doing?
I love the sound of the zither. I love the way it sounds like. If you close your eyes and listen to the zither, it sounds like at least three or four guitarists at once.
Yeah. Exactly. Right? Yeah.
And it's only one person.
Yeah.
So I don't think people realize how difficult it is to play this instrument. You can't just pick it up and play, right? So that's why he's master zitherist.
Yeah. And how long did it take to quote unquote master it?
Well, I really haven't mastered it yet.
And how long have you been playing?
57 years.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
That's a good answer, though.
Yeah. No, I'm constantly.
I haven't mastered radio. I'm doing it for you.
No, that's ideal. You never run out of stuff.
No, you never run out. Yeah.
Right. I had lessons until I was 13. It's my basic downfall. And then I put folks like Rudy Vacek here on the record and Knobel and others. I didn't realize how arrogant that was. I tried to make myself sound like the best other players in the world. Just didn't know what else
Rudy,
to do.
I wonder, is Rudy still around? I
imagine. No, yeah, he's been gone a long time.
Yeah.
Rudy was born in 1905.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad I held that vinyl on. Well, thank you so much. What a treat it's been tonight. So thanks so much. Jeff, talk about tomorrow. We always plug stuff at the end of the show, so talk about the George
Flynn music at the Green Mill, 2 p.m. at the Green Mill. Come on out. It's $5 to get in, or pay what you can. And if you want to hear really new music, there's going to be a lot of great Chicago composers performing and presenting their music.
It'll be great. Jeff
Kowalkowski.
And thank you so much for coming down in the weather, Kurt Von Eckroth and his wife Megan. You'll come back when the record comes out?
Anytime.
Okay. And John Hughes, what a great coincidence. You're in town for Soxfest, and here we are.
Excellent, baby.
Back together again.
Still handsome and bulletproof.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you all for listening. Thanks, Dan Long, for the production, and we'll see you soon on Nocturnal Journal on WGN.